Peter R. Breggin, M.D., is called the conscience of psychiatry for his many decades of successful reform efforts. His scientific and educational work provide the foundation for modern criticism of drugs and ECT, and lead the way in promoting more caring and effective therapies. His books include Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, Medication Madness, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal, and now, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, Understanding and Overcoming Negative Emotions. Welcome to the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour.
Hello, 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 my wonderful audience. Welcome to the end of the year. Christmas has just passed and the new year is approaching. I had planned to talk with you today about wonderful and loving things and to communicate with you and just positive news. So I just want to say for just very briefly, because there's so much for me to cover at the beginning of this show, which is positive but not loving. And I want to share these important breaking events with you. But let me wish you a wonderful, wonderful weekend and a wonderful holiday season and a wonderful coming new year, and remind you that what makes life really, really wonderful is to have a loving, caring relationship with the universe, with God, if your inclination is in that direction, with loved ones, with pets, with nature. And I define love as joyful awareness. It's just a good working definition that helps me. Am I joyfully aware or not? And sometimes, maybe too often, it's not, and I have to get myself back into that best way of relating to the universe. It's not possible to genuinely feel love and to be miserable and caved in at the same time. Not in my experience, anyhow. But I wanted to give you that little brief rather than a show about it. And today I won't have a guest. Today is Open Mic Wednesday, the last Wednesday of the month. We'll be taking callers at 888-874-4888. We'll be taking callers, 888-874-4888. You can call in on anything you want. And I hope you'll be calling in also on the opening remarks I'm going to be making about what's been happening in the universe of good and evil in which we all live. You're listening to me, as always, on PRN.FM. And you can email me, and I appreciate the emails I continue to get, and they help orient me and help me confirm whether or not a show's been a good one. And I occasionally am able to answer them in some useful way. And the email is breggenlive@hotmail.com. Don't forget to go to Breaking News also, where you'll get scientific articles that are put up every day, articles of interest to this audience, to me, to you. And it's Breaking News. It's up on breggen.com. And above all things, remember frequent alerts. The things I'm going to be discussing today, you will find the links to what I'm talking about in my recent frequent alerts. So they're free. All this is free. Sign up if you haven't for the frequent alerts. And of course, we're always archived, and that's where most folks follow us, is on the archive. So again, call in. 888-874-4888. Be the first to line up. And now I want to get into the subject that I'm going to be beginning with today. Many of you know from this show and from the frequent alerts on the website and other sources that there was a huge victory, which in the ECT field, which we can now announce, was a settlement with Thymatron. The shock machine put out by Somatics Inc. And this is a company that used to be owned by a psychiatrist named Abrams, who used to write scientific articles praising ECT and praising Thymatron and never telling anybody he owned it. I mean, he even was a big voice in the American Psychiatric Association's booklets that it would put out on ECT. and never saying, yeah, and I'm president of an owner of the company, one of the two in North America. Well, he's not there anymore. And not long ago, I described this the settlement to you. I was very heavily involved working with David Karen, K-E-R-E-N, a attorney in California who was taking suits, examining them against EC2 machine manufacturers, and also malpractice suits. And following the settlement, to everyone's surprise, all of a sudden, out of the blue, Somatics Inc. put up a report to the FDA saying that ECT causes brain damage. Rare, of course, but causes brain damage. We've never had an admission like that from the leaders, the promoters, the vile advocates of ECT. We've never had an admission like that from a manufacturer. We've never had an admission like that from the FDA, and so on and so forth. And it also went on to quote some pages, sentences from the most recent American Psychiatric Task Force report about that some patients, of course, rare again, but manufacturer here warning people using the machine, warning the world, that it can cause long-term vast obliteration of memory in people. So this became very official, and we saw this as a great victory. And then, as of today, folks, wham, the government responds and protects ECT as it's never before been protected. The FDA, which for years has tried to get around testing ECT machines, imagine ECT, what does it do? It causes a huge convulsion, big one. Nowadays, they often give 5-10 times the amount of electricity needed to crush the brain sufficiently to cause a seizure. And then the patient becomes comatose. And then this flatlining often of the electroencephalogram, the EEG, there's a temporary brain death phenomena, which the ECT leaders now, the unscrupulous leaders, consider a good sign for a good effect. Then the patient remains comatose for minutes at a time, wakes up in a state exactly like a very severe concussion, only it's closed head, electrically induced convulsion and lobotomy and temporal lobe injury. And then when the patient recovers even more, after as long as they've had one or two from then on, they are in the class of traumatic brain injury severe. So the FDA says that, in effect, that something that causes severe concussions followed by traumatic brain injury of a severe kind is so harmless, it now says, as of today, and you'll find on the frequent alert, you'll find the how to get and read what the FDA said, that they're backtracking totally on what they recently said under heavy pressure about testing the machines, and they've declared that patients with, quote, resistant, drug-resistant conditions, drug-resistant depression. That is, if you've had drugs and you haven't gotten over your depression, you are now suitable for ECT. This is the biggest widening that has happened in the history of the FDA, where it's actually just saying flat out, prove without serious testing for its use in treatment-resistant depression. Well, depression is treatment-resistant to the drugs because the drugs make people worse. They don't make people better. All the new research indicates they don't help. They do about as much as placebo, and then they add all kinds of harms from the drugs, including sometimes permanent sexual dysfunctions, often notably permanent in men, including harm to brain cells, indications of brain cell death, apathy and indifference long-term. So all these terrible things the drugs do, well, they don't make people better. So now all these poor souls, patients, people like you and me, like my listeners, people like us, people, plain folks, who get sad, go to the doctor, they get a drug, it doesn't help. They're now candidates for ECT, approved without testing by the FDA. All of this happened without any of us knowing the FDA was changing its mind. It didn't hold new hearings, didn't do any warnings, didn't put any foreshadowing in the Federal Register. It just went ahead and did this. Now, is this related to the caving in of the ECT company, the Thymotron manufacturers, Somatics Inc.? I don't think so. I suspect this is a little longer in timing, but I don't know for sure. But simultaneously with all of this going on, there is something amazing happening in a new film. And I believe this new film sheds enormous light on this huge question of why would the federal government, its arm, the FDA, go so far, far, far out of its way to support brain damage, frank brain damage. It's never been demonstrated on decent clinical trials to show any improvement. That's got at least one study showing it increases suicide rate. No study showing it improves the suicide rate. None. Not one. So why would the FDA stick out its neck like that? Well, the secret may be in a new film that's just come out called The Minds of Men. This is a film that you must watch. It's only been out a very short time, and it already, I just found out before I went on the air, has 365,000. That's right, a third of a million downloads, and it's only been out a very short time. The film, The Minds of Men, is put out by two wonderful young people, very young by my standards, but young by anybody's, Aaron and Melissa Dykes, D-Y-K-E-S, The Minds of Men. You can Google it or you can find it through my most recent, frequent alert, The Minds of Men. And much to my pride and satisfaction, under the title, it says, featuring Peter R. Bregan, M.D. These young folks came to my home and my office, filmed me for an hour and 20 minutes or more for the film. But I'm really not the film. It's not about me, not even close. I don't even think I appear until the third and fourth of four segments that go into the film. They had already done research. They already knew things I didn't know about mind control. They already knew more about the people whose work I attacked and stopped. Jose Delgado, who was putting caps on the top of people's heads on a Harvard ward and stimulating them and tapping their brain without their knowing it while they walked around the ward. Jose Delgado. When I attacked him critically in multiple articles on the air, on radio and TV in the 70s, he had to leave Yale, go back to Spain, where he was the darling of the fascist government there. Mark Irvin in Sweden, operating, first trying to do it at Harvard Med, Mass General, being driven out and having to go to Boston City, and who were doing these horrendous experiments in cooperation at times with Delgado. I cut off their federal funding. Now, here's a secret that I disclosed at the time. They had funding from the Justice Department. Now, why would Justice be supporting this mind control, surgically implanted electrodes? What in the world's going on there? Well, we know more and more now from the great film, The Minds of Men, that this wasn't just supported by the Justice Department, that the CIA was deep into mind control. We already knew, by the way, that the CIA was supporting the horrendous ECT experiments going on in Canada. Again, the film tells us more. That was the DE Cameron was doing that. The film tells us even more than I knew about any of this stuff. And again, most of the film is not about my work and what I did in stopping the return of psychosurgery. It's about, it goes all the way back to cybernetics and Norbert Wiener. It goes back to all kinds of researchers who were getting federal funds and getting research funds from places like Rockefeller, who was also funding eugenical studies in Europe at the time that Hitler came into power. The eugenicists were already lined up, ready to work with the Führer, and part of their money was coming from the Rockefeller Foundation. So this is an amazing movie. It's got documentation in it I've never seen. It's got film in it I've never seen. It's even got some film of me when I was very young that I've never seen. The Minds of Men, Aaron and Melissa Dykes. I think that this is one of the most important films ever done in the history of psychiatry, and especially the reform of psychiatry and all psychology and all the health-related professions that deal with the brain and always have at their fingertips a government or a Führer ready to make use of mind control and to develop it. And do you think it's ended now? I don't think so. And so I wonder, bringing this all around to the beginning, I wonder if someday we're going to find out that the FDA was being told not to let ECT, which the CIA had been funding as far back as the 70s, not to let it go under the crushing weight of truth. Don't let it get crushed by the steamroller of the light of truth. Keep it alive. Keep it alive. I have no direct evidence for that, but we didn't have direct evidence for a ton of stuff that you're going to find in The Minds of Men. And speaking of young, you'll see a young Bill Clinton as president saying that there was a lot of covert stuff going on that he learned about, and that it wasn't all keeping with modern ethics, and I think Bill Clinton says, or with ethics of any age. So I just can't tell you how pleased, excited, and happy I am for Aaron and Melissa Dykes, for the fact that they are on their way to going viral with a very serious, serious film, The Minds of Men. And that's what I'm going to talk about for today. A couple of days ago, I didn't know I'd be talking about any of this. I had no idea that the FDA was going to come out of the blue and save electroshock treatment, save it and promote it. I had no idea. Well, we are getting lots of callers. I'm very pleased to see that. We'll start taking them in a minute. Right now, I want to check in with my staff. The staff PRNFM. I don't know if Jesse's there or Alex is there today. Maybe they'll tell me. And I'm going to ask them to send me numbers to see how many of you are listening to this on the holiday. I don't know, but a lot of callers. So let me take a look at what's happening here. And Jane, I want to go to Jane because she wants to ask about the ECT reclassification. Number three, Jane. Are you there, Jane?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Began.
Hi, how are you doing today?
A little stunned. First off, I want to thank you for all your work on behalf of psychiatric survivors. Like I said, my name is Jane. I'm a childhood drug shock survivor. I'm permanently disabled by all of these, and I've been working to educate people about the risks of drugs and electroshock for the last few years. through my website, Life After ECG. I saw the FDA reclassification and your alert this morning, and I've been kind of reading through it. I'm stunned. You know, they were quiet on this, and they used the same tactic because a couple of years ago that slipped in the proposed reclassification, and they're probably just assuming, hey, let's wait 3 years and, you know, try and do it again this way. But my question for you was, is there anything we as survivors can do right now in regard to this FDA reclassification?
Well, that's a very, very good question. In a sense, the FDA is absolutely permeable to criticism. We've seen that. But the criticism did slow them down and slow them down and slow them down until finally it's like a sneaky, covert, ha-ha, I got you anyway. You may have sent in thousands of complaints. I think that, in general, the survivor movement is the most powerful force we have for reform in psychiatry. And I've been so proud to be seen as an inspiration by so many survivors. And thank you, you know, for your confirming that. I think you want to just keep building the survivor movement, getting more and more people involved in it. Survivors of shock, survivors of psychiatric abuse, survivors of mental hospitalization, survivors of tardive dyskinesia, as individual groups and as a whole group. Just keep building it. Do everything in your power. You know, everything you can do, Jane, to bring hope to survivors online, to organize survivors. I don't think there's anything in particular probably that can be done about this. People can write in to their congressmen and women. They can do the same with their senators. They can go the usual routes. But I think the most important thing is the strength of the movement. Are you actively involved in the reform movement or in the patient, former patient movement?
Most of it is just education. I do help co-admin a support group on Facebook for ECT survivors. And, you know, a lot of it's just been focused on putting the facts in front of people through videos and through blog posts and stuff, and just to let survivors know that they're not alone, that there are still some things that they can do, that they can still have a meaningful life.
Well, absolutely. I mean, the human spirit is a reality. I do believe that we are not the same as our brains. I do believe that we're spiritual in nature. I don't have a lot of theology behind that. I don't belong to any particular religion. I've been brought up as Jewish, but I do believe that there is a God of some kind, some force, something better, bigger, something that has to do with love, and that when people tap into that something that has to do with love, they can improve their lives. And I see it in my practice with brain injured people, that you can just build a loving life. And I think this is true of many of our old people who end up on the decline, drugged and virtually murdered by psychiatric drugs in nursing homes, because their lives are so shortened by the drugs, that even our elderly who are having issues with their memory and other mental processes, with love, with care, with engagement, loving engagement, can thrive. So that is my major theme when it comes to people who have had injuries. And the more you can do that in your group, you know, the better. And I think this show may be turning into something that will be useful for the psychiatric survivor movement, but for everybody who's interested in doing something about the horrible psychiatric technologies. Do you get satisfaction, Jane, about participating, doing the work you're doing on a volunteer basis, I'm sure?
I do. It's been heartbreaking. At the same time, we had a suicide of a young mother about a year ago, and it's so hard because as a group admin, you just see these stories over and over and over, just waves and waves and waves. And I think one of my biggest problems is I'm dealing with a lot of physical health issues, And at the same time, you know, if I get exhausted, I have to shut down. I can't do anything. I can't work. And I just see these tangible needs not being met for survivors. I had somebody contact me, you know, recently. She's on the verge of homelessness, and I can't do anything as far as that goes. I'm not a social worker. I can't tend to these people's needs. And, you know, one big request I have for, you know, people that are in leadership roles of a lot of these organizations that are helping psychiatric survivors, you know, don't forget the ECT survivors, because, you know, there's, you know, for every good paper somebody writes, you know, there's, you know, 10 or 20 more being published that are promoting ECT. And while it might be validating for survivors, you know, survivors need social workers. They need to get out of abusive, you know, home environments if their family's not happy with how they've changed with their disability. You know, we desperately need help. And there's only so much, you know, us survivors can do, because we're just struggling with so much. We're just trying to survive on our own.
I think that what you can do is really talk among yourselves about the importance of mutual support, of caring, of not letting the injuries stopping you from being a caring human being who cares about other people who've been injured, caring about each other. I think the tendency when one is being a reformer is to fall back on rage, outrage, and anger, and hate. And I found out early in my career as a reformer, which would have been in my 30s and 40s, now in my early 80s, that anger, hostility, vindictiveness, really got in the way to having a full life and to continuing as a reformer, that I just couldn't keep up being a reformer if I didn't think of it in a caring, loving, positive way. So perhaps you could bring as much as possible of that into the groups you're in. It would do wonders for you. There's nothing better and more fulfilling than bringing that concept into people's lives.
It is. And it's anytime I, you know, I've talked to people that have gone like 20 years without ever talking to another survivor. And so it's things like that that kind of keep me going. Like I probably went about 10 years without realizing that my experience was pretty common. And it's just devastating, that isolation, and just the ability to give people that connectedness, even if I can't interact with them that much or anything else, just being able to tell them they're not alone, that's part of what keeps me going.
Well, it's all very, very important, and I think that that's the response to give to what's going on right now with ECT. It's just a way for you to have another hook to connect and to, you know, go on with whatever issues you're going to do, whether you're going to, and whatever activities, whether you're going to do write-ins or whether you're going to do some sort of demonstrations, peaceful demonstrations, whatever, petitions, keeping this in the public light, because oddly enough, most people have no idea that ECT goes on. Even though periodically or many of the big television stations put on, you know, a promotional for ECT, most people have no idea it's going on, even though there are probably hundreds of thousands of people getting ECT in the country today. Do you have any more thoughts about it? And let me remind folks, by the way, we still have room to take callers. It's 888-874-4888. Again, give us a call. It doesn't have to be about this. 888-874-4888. And we'll be glad to talk. about what's on your mind, and it could be positive too. It can be about Christmas and New Year. It can be about your spirituality and how you're handling the coming of the end of the year. And I keep wishing the very best for all of you, you know, who are listening today. Jane, any other thoughts?
I think that just kind of wraps things up. I would like to invite any psychiatric survivor organizations to contact me about helping try and create a safety net for survivors of tangible support, like social work and things like that. What was I going to say? Total blank. You can contact me at lifeafterect.com. Or my Facebook page at Life After ECT. I'd really like to see actual support for things that people need, especially when they've just recently been injured. At the very least, to create a directory of sympathetic mental health practitioners that might be able to help survivors get psychological testing and hopefully some rehabilitation and access to social services. So, again, you can reach me at lifeafterect.com, my contact page, or Twitter or Facebook at lifeafterect. And thank you again, Dr. Breggin.
Well, thank you so much, Jane. And I do hope that you'll have an inspired start to the new year. And I wish all the survivors out there to become triumphant. Remember that surviving is important, but it can't be the sole focus of your thinking. It has to also involve triumph. As you begin to survive, then you really, 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 really succeed, really prove your worth when you triumph, when you find a loving, positive, caring attitude toward the folks around you, toward the world. And speaking of positive and caring, I've got Sarah from California online. Sarah!
Breggin?
Are you there?
How are you? I sure am. Can you hear me?
Huh? I can hear you very well. Can you hear me okay?
I certainly can.
Hi, Sarah. It's a pleasure. Sarah is a regular caller into the show, and she's been made a guest on one occasion and will be back again. We've never met, but I think it's fair to say we really appreciate each other a lot. Sarah was on not long ago, and she has been through the worst of the psychiatric mill and has triumphed. I'm sure you always feel like you're triumphing, so let me be quiet and let you start talking, Sarah.
Well, I think it's important to recognize that we don't need to prove our worth because that's inherent. And so we can really change the way we look at things simply by embracing that inherent worth. I think it's all too often that as survivors, we've been downtrodden and dismissed so frequently that we can no longer recognize our inherent goodness. And so being able to look for ways to embrace that inherent goodness and magnify it and share it with others can really not only light our own lives, but can also light the path of hope for others as well.
Well, I love that. And I think that, in fact, it's good for you to catch me on that phrase, prove your worth. That's the problem of speaking extemporaneously, but it's also the goodness of having great listeners. Now, you don't have to prove your worth. It's God-given. It's given to us by ourselves, by our loved ones, but it's God-given. It's inherent in us. You don't even have to be given it. Feel it for yourself. Be aware of it. Sarah, tell me, how's things going now in the last few days of 2018?
I think they're actually going really well. Right now I'm connected to that treatment that's working to heal the the misregulation of my neurotransmitters. I just finished that. My dystonia has been improving. My akathisia, not akathisia, my dystonia and my Parkinsonianism has been improving. The only time I really have difficulties is when I'm exposed to things in the air. And so I'm looking for a way to heal the blood-brain barrier. So it's been just joyful to be with family and in a clean environment and just having fun with the many things that I've been blessed with.
Well, that's wonderful. I can tell you, folks, if you can feel that way after what Sarah's been through, any of you, including me, there's no excuses for letting ourselves cave in. And I know Sarah struggles. We all struggle. Life is really difficult, you know? And we're born with all kinds of mixed instincts and mixed drives, and we grow up under confusing circumstances. Life is not easy for anyone, and if you look at someone who seems to you to be very successful, the odds are they overcame a lot to get there. That's my experience of all the human beings I know. There may be some exceptions, but Sarah, it's really good. I'm so glad you're having a good period of time for yourself. Anything else you want to say about ECT? You're an unfortunate expert on ECT from having had such an ungodly amount.
Yeah. You know, I think it's just startling to see the recent reclassification of the ECT device. Part of me wonders if this reclassification might become the beginning of the end of ECT, because at this time, a very small percentage of people have received ECT treatment. And I think with the reclassification, there's going to be this misconception that it's actually safer than it really is. And consequently, more people will be prescribed it. And I think in doing so, in broadening that net of people receiving ECT, we'll be broadening the net of people being damaged by ECT. And as terrible as it sounds, maybe that's what it's going to take to have a larger, more vocal presence in researching. And I'm online, and I have so many doctors are saying, oh, but it's modern ECT is so much better and XYZ. And I'm like, show me the animal studies. Show me how it somehow changed these little micro hemorrhages in the brain. Show me the difference, because there really hasn't been anything demonstrated. And so with this reclassification, as sad and as unfortunate as this reclassification is, and I cannot believe they did it in the face of the class action suit that just forced somatics to say that ECT causes brain damage and causes permanent brain damage, the risk is inherently greater under those four conditions, which one of which happens to be being concurrently prescribed psychiatric medication. When I read their risk factors, I was laughing so hard, because each of those risk factors were things that I had experienced, with the exception of the slime machine. So I think if we have more people being prescribed ECT, we're obviously going to have more people damaged by it. And perhaps that's what's going to take in order to get the recognition that this is actually very dangerous and very harmful and reduces the quality of life tremendously. Mm-hmm.
One of my callers, I haven't picked her call because it's a fairly narrow concept, but it's a good one. And she asked to explain NNT, the number needed to treat. And there's a concept in statistics that helps make real, how frequent damage is going to occur. And that concept is the number needed to treat before the adverse reaction is likely to appear. So a number needed to treat could be, say, 5, meaning that once you have 5 people, you're likely to get one who is going to have the adverse reaction. So what is the number needed to treat with ECT in order to get a significant likelihood of serious harm being done? And the number needed to treat is 1.
Yeah.
1. Because by the second or third ECT, as I mentioned earlier, you have been put into a, first of all, you've gotten enough electricity to your brain, usually to be several times more that needed than to produce a convulsion. And that's why modern ECT, one of many reasons actually, why modern ECT is much more dangerous than the older kind. And you mentioned that people calling you and doctors calling you and say, oh, the new is safer. No, the new is far, far worse, because in the past you could get 80 milliamps to produce a convulsion, and doctors would say, well, we're using the minimum amount. That was the idea. 80 up to maybe 120 milliamps. Well, the modern machines are fixed at between 800 and 900 milliamps.
You have to
get
800
or 900 milliamps.
The anesthesia. Yeah.
Well,
you have to push through the anesthesia in order to induce the seizure. Because normally in the ER, if someone comes in having a grand mal seizure, they'll give them the same class of medication that they're giving you to have ECT to stop the seizure. And then they have to push through that with all of the electricity and then reach the seizure threshold. So it's so counterintuitive.
Well, explain that it's inevitable that modern ECT has to give more current than the older kind. And the current's one of the best measurements of damage. And that's simply because you got to push through the anesthesia, which is making it harder to cause a seizure. And also the pre-meds you got the night before to put you to sleep and so on. But it's more evil than that, because the new ECT leadership argues in favor of giving 5, 6, 7, 8 times more than is needed to cause the seizure. And you get multiples of 7, 8, 9, 10, the amounts of current, the amounts of energy, the amounts of charge, all of which are measures of trauma. They're all measures of trauma, and they all go escalating on the new ECT. And that's what the FDA has approved for the folks out there in a really horrible situation. Sarah, would you can hang on if you like.
Okay.
Someone else is calling about the ruling, so if I get a chance, I may come back. It looks like we'll be able to talk mostly about the ruling today. Julie in Massachusetts, about the FDA ruling.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Oh, very clear, like you're in the room.
Great. Thank you very much. This is my first time calling in, and I've always only gotten the reruns. I read the ruling. I got it in my email just a few days ago when it said, as of December 26th, and I kept thinking, oh, my God, it's the holidays again. They snuck it in, I think, December 24th, and it was in my email. Like people are going to look at their email or look at the news December 24th. The timing is obviously deliberate, but, you know.
Well, and maybe they wanted to give a present to some very, very important people out there, right?
Great present. Well, I was reading the ruling itself, and I, you know, it was kind of crushing to read that they had taken all the individual stories and tossed them out. The only ones they kept were the ones that quoted studies. And I kept thinking to myself, these studies are done by people who are of this elite class called doctors. They are not representative of the, you know, cross-sectional population of people who receive ECT, who mostly were yanked out of their college life, yanked out of their careers, and, you know, most of us do not hold MDs, and, you know, after ECT, of course, many people can't go on, you know, they have to go on disability, and unfortunately, you know, I can't believe they, you know, of course, the people who's going to quote the studies, the doctors. And so they basically, you know, I knew, I had written a 28-page testimony to them, which is on my blog, juliemadblogger.com, anybody can read it. I wrote it very fast in 3 days because I had to, but, you know, I wrote down everything I could remember about mostly what happened afterward and how they tried to give me another diagnosis to explain away why I couldn't think straight. And
isn't that a horribly humiliating experience? So many
extremely,
people have it.
Extremely. I couldn't, you know, people who have been through ACT know what it's like. You can't keep track of anything. You get lost, typically. And, you know, it's just a thought leaves your head as soon as it goes into your head. And because this was happening, the last thing they were going to admit was that this was from the ECT, so they just gave me another diagnosis. And interestingly, as soon as I left McLean, that diagnosis got taken off. But while I was at McLean, they were going to put me in a state hospital, and they upped the diagnosis to severe level because I just, you know, wasn't responding to DBT. Of course I wasn't. It was brain damage. But unfortunately, that happened. It stole not only a year and a half of my life, but wrecked my reputation. I mean, you have another diagnosis on your record. It impacts your life. It impacts your relationships. It impacts, you know, some people actually take on the characteristics of the diagnosis a lot. I think most people do. Once they're given a diagnosis, they're going to start acting the diagnosis. I think this has been shown. It's the looping effect, and I did for a little while until I realized, hey, this isn't me. But I'm also a lithium survivor, and currently just trying to finish a book on lithium that I'm writing. It's called Life After Lithium. But I wanted to talk mostly about that ruling because, you know, not only do they throw out all survivor stories, unless we quoted studies, unless we quoted a whole bunch of studies that had new information and stuff, they also threw out a study that showed significant brain damage done to people. I think we're all, probably some of us are familiar with the study, but anybody who quoted that, it was tossed out. They said the study is invalid.
What study was
that? The study is invalid. I think it was frequently quoted by anti-ECT people, you know, mm-hmm. folks like survivors, and but that one they threw out. They said this one shows significant brain damage, but we're throwing it out. You can see it in their statement that they have. Yeah. They threw out that study,
and they're being
and they
so
said the other studies were significant.
So hypocritical. Sometimes you have a non-psychiatric drug, an antibiotic or something, and it causes a severe liver disease in 3 or 4 people. There are no studies, no clinical controlled trials, just severe damage reported in, quote, anecdotally, and they'll take it off the market. They know very well that once you start getting individual reports of severe damage from a treatment that has to be taken extremely seriously. And here they're getting tens of thousands of reports of severe damage. I've published way back in 1979 a series of patients I saw who had severe damage. Warnings like that for anything outside of psychiatry are very, very likely to result in something being taken off the market. The problem they face, folks, and this is so key, is that all psychiatric treatments are brain damaging. That's how they work. You know, I've talked about this at great length in my book, my medical book, but folks can read that, Brain Disabling Treatments in Psychiatry, a second edition. But I also talk about it in more simpler and more recent terms in Medication Madness, and I talk about it in Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. It's the principle that psychiatry has long known that the only way intervening in the brain works is by harming the brain, making you less aware, taking away some of your initiative, taking the edge off of the suffering you complain about, because either you can't remember the suffering, you have no idea what it's about, or your brain's unable to feel the suffering anymore. Nonetheless, most people end up suffering even more and more over time, and then they get very confused by the brain dysfunction and the suffering as to what the problem is, and then they're told they're severely mentally ill, and their parents or their family are told the same thing, and they get caught in this terrible web that you got caught in, where you're being told you're not damaged, you're crazy. It's just a horrible, horrible system, and because the system itself is so flawed, And it's being done to millions of children who are having their brains suppressed by the stimulant drugs, to making them apathetic, increasing their proneness to develop addictions with stimulants like cocaine later in life, causing them to lose their growth, both height and weight. But since it's growth hormone that's being injured, who knows what growth elements are really being disturbed in the process. You mentioned lithium, a severe neurotoxin, which, by the way, during withdrawal can cause mania. And let me take a breath there and ask and answer. How come psychiatric drugs, when you try to stop them, cause so much difficulty? Well, it's because the brain is specifically treating the new psychiatric drug that's entered through the blood-brain barrier and is now disrupting the brain. They treat it exactly like the immune system and the body treat a splinter. They go all out to get rid of it, to detoxify it, to keep it from causing harm. The brain develops countermeasures. And like the splinter, these can be inflammatory in their effects. They can be disruptive in themselves as last-ditch efforts to get the neurotoxin out of the brain or to stop its effects or compensate for its effects. So most psychiatric drugs, if not all, can at times and sometimes regularly, like the benzos are forever regularly causing a serious withdrawal reactions. You end up, as you try to come off the drug, dealing with a brain which is now injured and compensating. So when you try to stop your lithium, first, you've been injured by the lithium, the neurotoxicity, and second, your brain has been changed. It's changed itself to try to compensate for the harmful effects of the lithium or the benzo or the antidepressant or the stimulant. And as a result of that, those of you who have tried to come off psychiatric drugs and think you need the drugs or you're getting worse, you're actually going through the experience of the neurotoxicity, which now becomes more and more apparent as the drug is withdrawn, and the compensating effects of the brain. And you have to be especially careful coming off the benzos, for example, to deal with the effects that the brain is creating in response to the benzos. And since the benzos are sedating you and sort of crushing processes, the brain's fighting back and making you hyperactive to fight the sedation, and you end up with insomnia and anxiety and agitation as a withdrawal symptom. And lithium is suppressing whatever in your brain was generating some mania, and it's not really your brain. I believe mania is being generated by your spiritual state, your fight against depression. And then as you come off it, your brain just revs up and your mind revs up and you end up with a withdrawal mania. And it's with the stimulants, which tend to crush spontaneity while stimulating your brain, then you get sedated coming off of them. You crash, you get depressed, you get suicidal. Antidepressants will do the same thing. They often are stimulating your brain, in which case, especially the SSRIs, you can crash, get depressed coming off, get suicidal. But you can also get aggressive, you can get angry. My general advice to people coming off the medications, try to find some decent professional therapist or your GP who will help you, rarely a psychiatrist, have a support network. And anything bizarre that starts to happen to you, anything threatening during withdrawal, assume it's withdrawal. Try to control the dose, slow it down, reverse it a little bit. Don't forget my book, Psychiatric Drug Withdrawal. And I have chapters on drug withdrawal as well in Medication Madness. But let me give a pitch. I don't pitch my stuff much. It's the new year coming, and let me pitch Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety, my book, Guilt, Shame, and Anxiety. The first half of it tells you why you develop guilt, shame, and anxiety, evolution and childhood combined, human evolution and childhood. The second part of it tells you how to identify guilt, shame, and anxiety, and the results, which are anger and numbing. But when guilt, shame, and anxiety just get to be too much, we just get numb or angry. And the third talks about, the final section of the book, about love, about taking charge of yourself and daring to become a source of love, daring to reach out to other human beings. Because we survive together and thrive and triumph together. That's our nature. We're very social people. We're very social creatures. Sarah, Julie, are you still there or have I lost you? Sarah, are you still there?
Yes,
I think my... Are you there, Sarah?
Can you hear me? Yes.
Oh, yeah. I think it took a little bit to get back to you. Listen, I want to say together with you, I want to wish folks, you know, a really wonderful conclusion to the year and a very happy new year. And I want to wish that to you. And maybe you'd like to say something to your friends as we get near to the end of the show.
Well, I am so excited for this coming year. I think that we have a lot of hope in just learning more about the underlying causes of our symptoms and just pushing forward in understanding that change can and will happen and that we can be the agent of change. And if I can, I'd just like to invite people to listen to my podcast. I've been sharing this message of hope on my new podcast called The Emotional Self-Reliance Podcast. So I know that this new year is going to be something fun and something fun to look forward to. So thank you so much, Dr. Brain.
Sarah, thank you so much for being on the show. Thank you, thank you. And to my wonderful audience, I've got lots of new and exciting things that are going to be happening in the new year. I'll be making more videos. I'm going to be putting up some amazing filmed interviews, one that was done for all the outtakes, all the stuff that wasn't used from The Minds of Men. And don't forget, you can Google it real easy, The Minds of Men. Listen to it. Send it to your friends. It's right there for the taking. Contribute a little money if you can. The Minds of Men, it's an amazing film. And have a wonderful new year. Thanks for being a part of my wonderful audience. Thank you so, so much. I look forward to doing better for you, better and better as we go along. Bye-bye now.